It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here. Declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the Republic Broadcasting Network from BEA, beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, here at Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com studios, Jet Lacey on the board. Now, Suzanne Trimbath is a PhD from New York University, where she also taught, and there's been a life experience. So here's a young lady, starts in the 80s, working with the Federal Reserve, preparing the Economic Research Department briefing documents for the Federal Bank of San Francisco, and she saw when they went from, you know, trying to control the economy with the dials that were, what's the interest rate's going to be? And they go, yeah, we'll get a new dial. We'll do money supply. And that didn't work. We'll go back to the one that failed over here, and free market solutions never seem to enter into it. So what we're talking about is that we're getting into where they're electronically consolidating the reconciliation of stocks. And that allows for the ability to buy and sell stocks that, you know, aren't really there. So we're talking about naked short selling and how this has happened. And now we're in a situation to where I want to get back to what we were talking about when we left in the last segment, is that, Suzanne, when we have a pile of stocks that's sitting there and you have more than one claim to that actual stock, how are we going to reconcile who gets it? Suzanne? Have we lost Suzanne? Oh, man, that's not good. Well, we'll go ahead and see if she calls back, and at the network they can punch it up. And if you're there, Suzanne, just hold on. But we got a fill-in. Man, the man Chris is in studio. He just came by to say, yo, what's up? You know, here's a really good way to, you know, segue into this and make sure that we get someone that can, you know, fill the time here while we're getting Suzanne back, because I really wanted to get into that. And go ahead and tell us, Chris, you know, how's been your last couple of days, man? You're a popular guy.
I guess so. I don't really watch TV or listen to the radio, so I have no real idea other than what people are telling me.
You know, what happened is yesterday, if you go to freedomsphoenix.com and you look at the archive of this show, I was on CNN with Rick Sanchez yesterday, and they were trying to punk us. You know, they wanted to, you know, this was planned. And I'm like, yeah, you guys are so easy, man. You know, it is so easy to get you guys. And the thing was, is that it wasn't as planned as probably they think, but it was more planned than what they thought, too. It was more organized. We had worked with the Phoenix Police Department. This was not a secret. You, all the audience here, you guys knew. And there was, you know, really not that big of a deal with them. They knew we were coming. And then we found out this weekend that you planned on bringing an AR. And I'm going, okay, so, well, now Ramirez of the Phoenix Police Department, you know, be prepped. And that's all good, man. We got it covered. This morning, I got a call from the local Clear Channel talk radio, and yesterday they were going off. J.D. Hayworth was a former congressman that has a show, and he was very much against what we did. And I couldn't really understand why. You have their audiences, obviously conservative. They thought it was great, and they got hammered by the calling guest. And then we had this morning, their morning show had me on. And I'm wondering why, and what it was because they had a big, giant health care forum plan thing at a tavern, and they got absolutely no coverage. You eclipsed everybody, and it just angered them, and that's how they lashed out. And I think the audience is going after them, saying, man, which side are you on? We'll be right back, and hopefully we'll get Suzanne just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Hey, welcome back here. Declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock. We got Suzanne back, and that's very good. I had so many other things we wanted to talk about. But thanks, you know, Chris happened to stop by because, you know, that's where all the action is. You know, we're all reconciling all our stories of what's going on. MSNBC won me on this morning, and I talked to the booking agents, and I just said, you know, I don't. They're too afraid. They're full of fear. I mean, Chris Matthews is just, these guys are, you know, we got our message out. We're good. You know, I they're not going to do me any favors, and I'm not going to help them, so I'm good. You know, when you want to do, they want to do it on the phone, and I go, no, when you want to do it live in studio, I'm more than happy until then. But we made the Daily Show with Jon Stewart. I'm so proud of Chris. So what we're going to do is that we get back to Suzanne. What I want to make sure that we get into is where we left off, the fail to deliver. Now, who is going to have access to those? Who's going to have access to those actual stocks? You know, where? How do they determine who gets ownership?
Well, this is exactly the problem, because it's like a big game of musical chairs. As long as new money's coming into the system, right?
Madoff?
Yes, like the Ponzi. As long as new money's coming in, new shares are coming in, people are selling, whatever, then there's, when someone goes to take their shares out, there'll be enough shares there. But if everybody tries to take their shares out, there won't be enough.
China.
Now, there's a company called CMKM Diamonds. Okay, I think their symbol now is CMKX. But CMKM Diamonds actually recognized that there were more people had this electronic ownership than they had shares in existence. So they asked all of the shareholders to pull their certificates out of the depository, out of the central system. Just get it registered in your own name, and then you'll know those are your shares because you're registered with the company.
Okay, can you do that? Now, obviously, I guess they did, but
they were the last company to try it, because after they did it, the Depository Trust Company went to the Securities and Exchange Commission and got a rule made that said you can't do that.
Oh, of course they did.
Of course.
Okay, because, now wait, let's focus on that for a second. Now, what was the name of this company?
It's called CMKM Diamonds.
And what do? They mine diamonds?
They had some claims on some fields in Canada where they were testing core samples for
diamonds. Okay, so you have the people there, you know, buying stock, and they go, you know, you better go get your pieces of paper, okay?
Right.
Go get your pieces of paper, because you can still. And this was done when? What year?
2004 or 5.
Oh,
maybe.
So since 2000, for at least the last 4 or 5 years, you have not been able to go and physically get the stocks that are supposed to be in your name.
Individuals can, but the company can't request that they, like what the rule says, that the company can't be the one to say, I don't want to play in the depository. Individuals could go in and get their certificates, but what happens is the broker's not going to charge you $25 or $50 to get your certificate out of there.
Okay, now wait a minute. So the company, what they were doing, this diamond company, they said,
right,
you know, we're going to go, we want them all. It's our stock. We're taking them out. Just give me. Right.
Right. We don't want to be part of, like, we don't want to register any shares to CD & Co.
Okay, now
we know that once it gets in there, it gets multiplied, and we don't want to be in that system anymore.
Okay, so now, does that take them off the New York Stock Exchange? Is there some penalty for that?
Well, at that point in time, it would not have. It does now, because the depository got a rule passed that said that that issuers aren't allowed to do that. And then the New York Stock Exchange got a rule passed that said that your shares have to be, you have to be able to put your shares into CD & Co.'s name if you want to be listed on the New York Stock Exchange.
Oh, so those SOBs. See, this is how the bank robbery is happening.
Right.
Now, this is fascinating, Suzanne. This is going to be a great archive show forever, because now we're starting to understand, you know, the companies, as they are, you have a piece of paper that represents part of the ownership and the value and the of your company. They have somebody that owns that stock. Then they're
trading it, you know, to other people that, you know, more than what actually exists. Later, there's going to be a reconciliation and somebody's going to say, hey, man, that's my stock. No, I bought it. No, I got claim. No, I got a piece of paper. And somebody's going to have to reconcile that. And this company said, you know, can we just not play? I want all ours. We'll just take them. We'll take them and we'll deal with it in our own, the people that own our company and our employees and our investors, and we'll divvy it up ourselves. We're good. And they go, oh, you deliberately ducked. You're not allowed. So we go get a rule passed that if you do that, you can no longer be listed on the New York Stock Exchange. Am I correct?
That's correct.
And so now what was the reaction to that?
Well, so what happened was, in the case of this Team Cam Diamonds, they put in the shareholders started putting in requests and getting the certificates out. And what happened was the broker-dealers were telling them, certificates aren't available, your shares are worthless, I'm deleting your account, those shares don't exist anymore. And they were sending letters to investors telling them that there were no certificates available, they were deleting your position, the account is worthless, on the same day that broker-dealer was getting share certificates issued in their own name. So when you ask the question...
This is criminal.
When the music stops... whose claim will be recognized, I assure you it is not John Doe investor.
Okay, no. This is a crime, okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, well, I mean, it's theft. I mean, how is there not some local New York policeman not walking in the door going, you stole this guy's stuff. Here's his paper he owns. Where is it?
I wish I could answer that for you. I can tell you that I have described this to... you know, Securities and Exchange Commission, Department of Justice.
Yeah, no, you're wasting your time with that.
No one is.
No, that's, I already know the answer to that. You know, they're part of it. So I need to know.
So who do you go to? Where's our Elliot Ness?
Chris with a gun at an Obama rally.
Chris.
You think I'm kidding? That's what it's coming down to.
It is plain and simple. Simply stealing. I had, you know, the cop with a gun ask me, well, do you think there's anything criminal here? I said, I'm not a lawyer, but I do believe that stealing is a crime.
Yeah, you don't need to be a lawyer to understand. So let's get this very clear. We have an individual, even a group of individuals, doesn't matter, but an individual is going up and said, okay, I want my stuff. This is where I didn't sell it. Nobody, you know, said they gave me any compensation, you know, for taking it or changing ownership or whatever. And you got my stuff sitting in your vault there. I want my stuff. And they go, hey, you know what? Due to an electron that we put over here and pushed this button, you know, you're deleted. You don't have it. It's gone now. Have a nice day.
Yep.
Seriously, that's what happened.
Seriously, that's...
So yes, what's been... Is. What did they do? They go... Did anybody file a suit? Somebody had to file a suit or something.
Well, there's a group out in Pasadena that's, you know, trying to get as much information together as they can on how many companies was this done to, how many issuers, and how many shareholders of those issuers, and how much money was taken, because... the money was taken from these people, and they never did have shares because they were the buyers in the naked short sale. They were the failed to receive and the failed to deliver. And so the individual's money, whatever they paid for those shares in the first place, that money was taken from them, and they were never given value in exchange. So there's a website, unshareholder.com, unshareholder, because these people were never shareholders. Even though they invested in the company and put their money up, they were never shareholders because they were never given ownership. So they're the unshareholder.
Well, somebody stole their money then.
You're exactly right, Ernest.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, this is not, this is, I mean, you know, please, we can't get past this until I understand that there's somebody saying, I don't have jurisdiction to prosecute somebody for this theft. Now, I think that was something... you know, was that something Elliot Spitzer was, you know, they started targeting him because he was starting to, you know, hammer on these guys for doing this kind of stuff? And they said, you know what? We know you got a girlfriend, man.
I don't know that Spitzer was doing anything on this subject, but I'm not that familiar with everything that he worked on.
Nah, okay. Well, we'll get more details on that later. I know he had something involved with, you know, some of the stuff going on. But my point is this. There has to be – I mean, it happens to me. Oh, dang, Skippy, I'm walking it through. That's how I got in politics, dude. I started – you know, one little thread I pulled and found out how corrupt the entire system was. So I go to my local police department. Okay, who has jurisdiction? All right, well, this is out-of-state thing doing this. Probably going to wind up being some federal thing. So you go, all right, FBI, over state lines, wire transfer, lion, mail fraud, whatever the heck, fill in the blank. This guy took my money, did not give me stuff. That is fraud.
Right.
Theft,
right.
Stealing, something. So they've gone through this, and the reaction has been, take a number? I mean, what has been the reaction?
Reaction from who? From
law enforcement. Somebody.
You know, just nothing. I mean, they don't.
So these people go, "Hey, well, I'm screwed," and they're done.
One of the problems is the individuals who are, the recipients of the naked short sale, the individuals, the unshareholders, right? A lot of times they don't know that they've been cheated because no one ever told them, no one ever explained to them what I'm explaining to you now, which is that you may or may not have shares in your account. Okay. And so when their position is deleted, they just accept it. They say, well, the share price went to a penny or the share price went to zero, so there was no value there. Without recognizing that, number one, they never had shares, and so they were ripped off on day one, not on day 365. And number two, there are rules against broker dealers deleting your position willy nilly. Those securities have to be, it has to go, 2 years has to pass within which you cannot get certificates issued in the investor's name before it's appropriate for a broker-dealer to delete your position. Most people don't know that, and so they don't know that they have a right to file a complaint.
And a lot of times they're not individuals. There's large corporations or companies with one guy that pushes a button, signs a piece of paper, does it on behalf of everybody. And we're going to talk about that when we come back. Who is complicit in this? How many people? It's the entire system. We're going to get detail from Suzanne Trimbath when we come back on Declare Your Independence.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, on the Republic Broadcasting Network from freedomsphoenix.com studios. And we have Suzanne Trimbath on with us, and it's been a fantastic interview and a lot of great information that I've really been enthusiastic for weeks. I've been trying to get Suzanne on. She was out for a little while, and we finally got hooked up, and now we're on, and she's given us great information. Now we're down to the part to where we have some kind of reconciliation for these trades that we're doing, and there's actual stock sitting in the depository trust company that are being oversold. You know, there's more people have claim to that than the actual stocks exist. So somebody goes, you know, I just want them. You know, give me, I have the original, I bought a whatever, or I bought some kind of option on them, and it's supposed to be mine, and I borrowed it, and I paid for it, and whatever, and give me, and nope, now your account's been deleted. Now, these accounts, and a lot of times you would think you would have a mass uprising, for this stuff, but so much of the money that does this is collectivized money. It's a pension fund. It's a money market. It's some state municipal retirement thing, and it's just, you know, it's so, once you collectivize money in this big giant bucket, and you start doing, you know, who owns what and who did, and all of a sudden you have these big pension funds are just not worth anything because they're the ones that's having their accounts deleted. So who complains to who? So who is it that's actually the bulk of these types of positions that are no longer recognized anymore? Where does that come from?
Well, remember I mentioned this unshareholder.com where we're trying to get people to go in and as soon as they get information that their account was deleted or they have information that they are these recipients of the fail to receive or the naked short sales, to go in and list the the broker that is that told them that they don't have shares, right? To list the broker that they bought the shares from.
Okay, they. Are you talking about individuals or companies?
Individual shareholders. I'm talking about individual shareholders here.
Okay.
Because these are the people who, if you're an institution, if I'm a mutual fund and I buy some shares for my mutual fund account, right? I'm an institution who's doing the buying, then the executing broker will tell you that they didn't get the shares. So institution to institution, they know who didn't get shares. And in that case in particular, if I'm a big institution and the shares didn't come to me, a lot of times they don't complain because when they go to sell and they don't have the shares, they don't want the other side to complain either, right? But it's the shareholders underneath that institution who are the ones that are really getting ripped off.
You know, let me make this one observation. You know what this sounds like? It sounds like a... You know, an entirely new, much larger trillions of dollars of fiat. It's just pretend money.
No, the money's real. I mean, they're really taking your real money. That's the real
not,
part.
Not
it's
the money.
Shares are fiat.
Yeah,
the
that's what I'm saying.
Fiat.
The value that they're doing is just it has value because they say it does. Until it doesn't, no, I'm sorry, your account's deleted.
Right. Yeah, so, in that sense, yeah. I mean, and what happens is they're banking on two things, okay? The institutions that are doing this are banking on two things. Number one, that they can drive the share price to zero and drive the company out of business, and the shares really will be worthless, and eventually they'll get to delete all the records and shred everything, so there'll be no record whatsoever that they did this. That's one. Number two, that you'll get discouraged and sell your shares at the new lower price, so they can give you some of the money back and never have to deliver the shares to you, and you'll never know that you were never a shareholder. So those are the two things that they're banking on. And
wow.
When either one of those things happens, then they get away with it. And there's no record left behind. There's no, you know, what happens, the danger to the institutions in holding up this charade is that you go in and demand your rights as a shareholder, your right to cast votes, which is compromised in this whole situation as well, which means all of your corporate governance goes down the drain, or your right to actually take ownership of your shares, to take them, have them registered in your own name. If as we saw in the case of CMKM Diamond, if the investors do that, then the pressure is on to the broker-dealers because now they have to find a way to deal with the fact that they sold more shares than ever existed. Not just more shares than they own personally, but in many cases, more shares than ever existed.
Amazing. And now, the one thing that I want to get into next is then there's going to be an effort to try and reconcile this, and you can explain this to me. You know, about a year ago, I saw where they created, stories below include press releases by Mark Hitt and the DTCC announcing their combined efforts to make an accurate accounting of all the trades in the world. Now, this, they created this new thing. What was it, and what are they trying to do?
Okay, it's Markit, M-A-R-K-I-T. Is that
right,
the group you're
right,
talking about? Okay,
right.
So they're doing derivatives. These are the credit default swaps.
Now, is there a difference? I mean, you know, I mean, obviously, I understand it. It's the mechanism may not be a lot different, but it's a different instrument. And we're coming up on the break here. And I want you to, can we move to that, you know, credit default swaps? And you can explain that to us. Is this a good time to do that?
We can do that. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think we've made a good point here. I think I've helped clarify the issues around fail to deliver, fail to receive. And on the stock side, we can certainly talk about the credit markets and then the bonds as well.
And, you know, the one thing that I guarantee I'm going to be able to do is link them. Same people, the same stuff.
Yeah,
it's
of
big,
course.
Giant bank robbery. So we're going to find out the second arm of the bank robbery, how they're doing it. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Suzanne Trimbath, learning a lot just for you. Be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and another independence declaring kind of individual, Suzanne Trimbath. Boy, man, you're going up against the man, the big man, the man, in the banking industry and the financial world and all this, doing this. How are you still living?
Yeah, well, you know, I just tell them to get in line because they won't be the first ones that didn't like what I had to say.
Well, I appreciate you coming out on this. And we had Bud Burrell on last week, and we got up to the part about what we wanted to talk about, the Bank International settlements. We started getting into the Depository Trust Company, into how this is all going to work. He goes, you know what? You need to talk to Suzanne Trimbath. So we were glad we finally got a hold of you and we can get this going. Now, the thing that I'm looking at now is we have the market, M-A-R-K-I-T, Marquette, and the DTCC. First, explain who they are and what they're going to try and do.
Okay, so the DTCC is just a combination of the Depository Trust Company and the National Securities Clearing Corporation. Remember the two companies I talked about that were formed in the mid-70s for the central depository for all the certificates and shares, and then the organization that would do the post-trade reconciliation for settlement. Those two companies joined together in 2000, and they formed the Depository Trust and Clearing Corporation, DTCC, which is the only company of its type in the United States right now. Marquette and a companion company called CreditX, those two companies were formed by half a dozen global banks. Name the usual suspects: Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, etc. Those companies got together with some individuals who were willing to run this organization to begin to create the sort of centralized system that we have for stocks and bonds to handle the credit derivatives, in particular the credit default swaps.
Okay, now what year did they start doing this?
Off the top of my head, I couldn't say. It would be
about maybe
2000-ish, 2004.
Just in time for the Bush administration. Okay, so
we have them
creating these organizations that are going to help with the reconciliation of derivatives?
Right. So the derivatives market is just starting to take off at this point.
Okay,
now
you got to go back. You got to define derivatives.
Credit derivatives. Okay.
Well, it's derived from some index. It's like you're saying we're
going to... No, not even from an index. From any asset. So
you're gonna bet on the weather. You know, you're gonna bet on when the temperature.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's an insurance policy, and they hate when you say that. They don't want you. No insurance has to be regulated. And whatever. I go, you're betting on something that's going to happen that hasn't happened yet. And
there is that aspect to it, which is that kind of betting on the weather, betting on the way the index goes, et cetera.
Okay, you got to explain it to us.
Here's a more succinct problem with these credit default swaps. They are betting on a particular bond to go into default to have what they call a credit event. They skip a payment, miss the interest payment, can't pay the principal, or the market price changes. And in this case, they're actually tying that to a specific asset, the behavior of a specific asset. And so once it's presented in this manner, then the regulators and everybody say, okay, that kind of makes sense. Like I want some insurance protection. I own so many bonds from AIG, and I want some protection in case they default. I want to be able to have some protection in place, and so you buy this credit default swap.
From who?
From each other.
AIG.
Insurance companies sell it to the banks. The banks sell it to the insurance companies. AIG sold a lot of it. That's what got them into trouble from their London office, because they were selling this insurance on, guess what, mortgage-backed bonds, which, when they started to default, put the AIG at risk because they didn't have the money to pay off on all those bonds.
Okay, I understand what you're saying, but I want to put this in. But now, let me go ahead and put this in layman terms so that people kind of understand.
Okay.
You'll have a someone on their deathbed. They're laying in the hospital there. You know, the monitors are going, is he getting better or is he getting worse? Is he dying or is he, living? So they're sitting there, and you got these guys lined up at the door, and they walk in the room, and you got three guys standing there. He said, you know what? We'll do a life insurance policy on this guy. Now, we'll sell a life insurance policy to whoever. Some guys, I like life insurance policies because they're betting on me living. You know, that's good.
Okay.
So they're going, we're going to bet, that this guy is going to live, but our risk is fill in the blank, give us $10 million. So they give you $10 million, but the payoff is $100 million, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, if people that think this guy is going to get better, you know, or he does, he's like, you know, I want this insurance policy based on what investment I got in this guy. He's got college education, and I need him for my business, whatever. So I'm going to, you know, buy this insurance policy, and but if he dies and I don't get him and he's not going to act in my movie or he's not going to play for my football team or whatever, I'm going to get paid for the risk that I took. Now, somebody else will, you know, and he starts getting better and he's feeling good and he's out and he's jumping jacks and he's doing, they're going, cool, you know, I don't really need this insurance policy as much anymore. And somebody else says, you know, I'll buy it. I'll take the beneficiary on that because I know he has cancer. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden that $10 million you bet on getting a $100 million payoff, you know, that's getting up more towards $100 million. Okay. So if you know the guy's going to die, if you know the subprime is going to go, if you know that's going to happen, then that $10 million position's worth 20, 30 to you. And then it starts, all of a sudden he starts coughing up blood and people are going, hey man, I'll pay $60 million for that $100 million payoff. So then somebody's going, cool, I will sell it to you for $60 million because I know AIG doesn't have the money to pay me anyway.
That's a very good analogy. That's a very good parallel.
Then we can move on next one then.
Yeah. No, it's very good because, you know, what happened was with the let's just do the mortgage-backed bonds for a minute here. Of course, the banks knew that they were in trouble because they were writing riskier and riskier and riskier loans because they were getting fees for selling the mortgages off in the bond market, right? In the meantime, they also knew that they didn't have the paperwork to back up the mortgages that they put into the bonds. So naturally, they would know the real value of that insurance policy and be willing to pay more for it because they knew that it was going to go down because they are the ones that sold it.
Oh, man. We are so screwed.
There are actually homeowners in California and Florida who are walking away from foreclosure proceedings because that credit default swap bondholder didn't have the paperwork to prove a lien against the house.
Because they pushed
this stuff out so fast, they were in such a rush to make the fees that they didn't get the paperwork right.
In many cases, they sold mortgages
into bonds that they didn't even have addresses for the houses.
You know, this is because it was electronics.
It's part of the problem.
No, what allowed it. If it wasn't there, they wouldn't have been able to do it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's certainly this whole centralized electronic system enables this sort of theft.
Yes, it does. Okay, now, this is what I'll give you an instance here in the Valley. There was a gentleman that had a home, and it was going into foreclosure, and he filed. He goes, okay, produced a note. And Arizona state law has provisions in there that you have to have physical record or, you know, all kinds of – and if you destroy it, then you've canceled the debt, okay? Oh. So it goes to a judge here that we know. He was a libertarian candidate for governor back in 94. And eventually, you know, he's a very prominent individual, large law firm, good guy. And he is appointed by the governor to be a Superior Court judge. He'd been there 10 years. All of a sudden, this lands on his desk. And we're going, oh, we know what's going to happen. He's going to follow the law. And the law was, he goes, all right, I'm going to give you a week to produce the note. You know, you need paperwork? Give me paperwork. Oh, and it was Indy Mac. So he goes, all right, so show me the mortgage. You know, let's rock. Boom. Man, they got it out of his court and quicker than you can say boom. So they go into the federal court, and they say, oh, we're going to let them decide it. Now, the thing is they keep pushing it off and pushing it off and pushing it off because this guy is a homeowner sitting there going, you say I owe this debt, well, show me.
Right.
And there's so many transactions, even internationally,
yep.
And oftentimes, just because I don't even know why, they just shredded them.
Well, I thought that there would be, based on the fail to deliver in the mortgage bond trades, I thought there might be maybe 25% of the bonds would be, you know, these mortgages wouldn't exist. But there was a judge in California who said that they think it could be closer to 60%. It could be between 30% to 60% of the mortgage bonds out there don't have – there's no paper behind the mortgages.
And what's going to happen is there is going to be a lot of people starting to figure this out, and they go, show me the note, and what will they do? They will pass a new law. They will nationalize everything for everybody. The government will own it. Obama will be your landlord. They'll do something to try and bail out all these financial institutions because they, like you say, they have all the money. And they will do whatever
they
want.
They have all of it. They have
all
yours and
mine.
And the problem is then that, you know, and this is just, you know, because you know that, you know, I worked at Federal Reserve Bank and I worked at Depository Trust Company, and so I've tasted the Kool-Aid. I can tell you that the problem with allowing this to go according to the law, where the individual, if you can't prove the lien, you know, you don't get the house, the mortgage doesn't exist, et cetera. The problem is that the money that was invested in those mortgage-backed bonds and in these credit default swaps and then all this other stuff
belonged to the other people.
It's our money.
Yeah, it belonged to other people.
It belonged to 401k plans and pension programs in California and, you know, state employee retirement systems. That's where that money belongs.
But this all got traded up. They used that as an excuse
to
be able to manipulate, you know, this pretend money to put more. You're talking about the money supply. You know, we have the dot-com bubble goes. It's 9/11. Greenspan's going to, not on my watch. We're gonna, you know, give the boom back in there. We got a boom and bust. Well, gosh darn it, we got a plan for a boom. And we're going, how are they going to do this? I remember writing December 31st, 2002. I wrote an article, man. Sell your house, because here it comes. Because I saw the overspeculation to going through the cycle again here in Arizona. It's the same kind of thing. How are they going to be able to inflate that, do this again? Well, they came up with a new one on me. They go, well, we're just going to just borrow money into existence in real estate.
Right.
We're just going to lower the interest rate, and we're just going to reinflate this, and everybody's going to use their house as an ATM. You're going to have all this fictitious kind of made up sort of kind of money, and it's going to, you know, and then all the big bad guys will get their cut first, and then it's all going to come crashing down, which is what is happening now. Let's go to that. What will stop the crash? Is the math already done?
I think that there's the adult way to deal with this. Is that we all recognize what happened, and as you said, the law says that if you don't have the paper behind the mortgage, you have to cancel the debt. Let's deal with that the way that it is, okay? And that's the big boy thing to do. When you bought that house, when you bought those stocks, when you made those investments, you had to be an adult when you did that to say, I'm going to suffer the consequences. The problem is that if you tried to explain this to people while the market was going up, nobody wanted to hear it. Just like you telling people there's a problem in housing in 02, nobody's going to hear that because prices of everything is going up. And so in some sense, we're all responsible because we all enjoyed that gain on the way up. And so we all have to recognize that as this comes back to its natural state, we're all going to have to suffer. That's what should happen. I don't think that's going
to
happen.
Okay, now this is where we're getting in. This one getting to the meat, and the one thing I wanted to get to about this Bank International Settlement thing.
Right.
You have Marquette and whatever clones are out there going to try and reconcile all this stuff. You have the Bank of International Settlements is this uber central bank of the central banks. And, you know, are they going to play a role and all of a sudden they go, we're going to decide who owns what and reset. And now we went straight from the threat and everybody's all worried about the Amero. We're just going to go straight to the world, though. You know, we're going to have a central economy that's going to be one money that whatever, that they're going to wave a little bit of gold over it and it'll be the Russian ruble or something. All right. So I'm going, you know, whatever is coming, but this, I want to make that statement so that we can segue into the Bank of International Settlements. I never even heard of them or knew they existed till last summer. And I'm going, okay, there is a central bank for central banks. What jurisdiction do they have? And then you find out they have kind of like this sovereign Vatican immunity thing, you know? So and they're in Switzerland, I believe. Tell me what you know about the Bank of International Settlements and what role they play.
Well, to tell you the truth, I mean, I haven't gotten so far as to recognize a role of the BIS, the Bank for International Settlements, in this subject matter, what we're talking about right here, except to the extent that through that organization, they set the standards for bank assets, bank collateral, and bank assets.
And when they don't live up to that, great, wonderful, we love you, we're, you know, heck, a above board human being standard, then what? Is there some penalty?
I think, but the thing is that. They come together as a group and make recommendations about what capital requirements should be for banks. For example, this is one. They do many things, but this is the one thing that kind of leads you right back to where you and I were talking about the you know, financial markets here in the States. So they get together and set these standards, and then it's up to individual countries to find ways to enforce them, to make a decision about enforcing them. So it's not up to the Bank for International Settlements to say, you if you don't follow these accords, here's what happens to you, because they can only issue them as recommendations. Then it's up to the Federal Reserve Bank, the central banks in the individual countries to say, okay, we are adapting those standards now for this country, and here's how we plan to implement them.
Okay, and then they don't, and then what?
And they don't. I think if a bank fails to meet their capital requirements, then there are certain sanctions that the Federal Reserve can put against them. For example, until their reserve requirements are brought, their capital is brought up to a certain level, they can prohibit them from lending, from borrowing from the Federal Reserve from the open from the discount
window.
No,
I'm talking about from Bank International Settlements as their control or kind of their club with the Federal Reserve here.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, to tell you the truth, I don't know. I don't know that they have any sort of enforcement power where they can come out and say you have to do things this way. Except that, like so many things in the financial markets, if you don't follow these rules, then you don't get to play in the game.
Now,
and everybody wants to be in the game because there's advantages.
Now, I understand. They're all got to be in the club and get the bathroom key,
right,
you know, the executive
right.
washroom. Now, I'm
right.
now one thing that I just want to touch on. You can give me a 30-second answers on this. Coming up on the end of this segment is the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. What role are they in there? They're they even in this? How are they cowed to?
Not so much. I mean, the BIS at least is involved on the. I mean, they do make statements about this central counterparties, clearing and settlement, depository trust company, those sorts of activities, as well as banking. The IMF and the World Bank, not so much. They're more geared towards aid programs. Foreign
yeah,
aid program.
But they're getting their money from somewhere, and it's
so they get it from us. They get it from the G8 countries. All make contributions to them.
So it's it's our tax money going into this private because they can't. It's like us giving money to the UN or something.
Yes, in a sense.
Well, here we go. More people taking our money. We'll talk about more when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Suzanne Trimbath. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Suzanne Trimbath. Man, it's really bad. It's bad, 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 bad. Now, the thing is that, I tell you, the reason we have kind of an upbeat on a lot of this stuff is that for the first time in human history, this stuff always goes on. There's always somebody that's going to take advantage of the good nature of people mm-hmm. and rip them off. That's just going to happen. But for the first time in human history, we have the ability, and a lot more in real time as time passes, to be able to understand it and see it happening before our very eyes and knowing it's who's supposed to be lynched. It's like... Now, whether you do it or not, I'm all about the love-illusion. Let's just go ahead and fix us. Let's stop worrying about, of course there's going to be bad guys that take advantage of us. How about we stop letting them do it and helping them? Let's try that one first, okay? So now we're in a situation to where we got just a few minutes here, and I want to give you an opportunity to summarize this up for us. You've gone through this thinking that once you – I went through this too. I mean, this is how I became an activist. You think that the proper role of government is to defend individual rights, to protect our life, our liberty, our property, and that their only function is for that. When they are the enablers of the people that deprive us of our rights, of our property. When they are the facilitator, the enabler of people that rip us freaking off every single dime they can, then they lose their legitimacy to govern anything. So I'm going, we were like, yeah, can we hurry up and get to a police state so we can leave? I mean, can we? We'll realize we're going, okay, I get it. We should stop this. And that's eventually what's going to happen. What do you think the next step is? I mean, are they just going to reset and do it, and everybody's going to go, okay, and they just start and fill in their position again and start it all over?
I'm afraid, Ernie, that that's exactly what's going to happen unless individual investors, individual citizens...
Rise up! Where's Chris? Hey, Chris! Get your AR, man! It's time! Suzanne said.
Call Chris. He could be our Elliot Ness. I'll just give you one example. There's actually a proposed roll-up at the Securities and Exchange Commission to pull surprise audits on broker-dealers. And I submitted comments on this stating that I was fully in favor of this because what they need to do is to go in and find out where those phantom shares are. Let's make sure that they're not selling stuff that doesn't exist. And those are the opportunities that investors have to repeatedly bring to the forefront.
You know, it's going to come.
They don't slide these things past you.
It's going to come down to trust. You know, there's going to be some, you know, Fred's bank that's going to go, you know, we don't do this and pinky swear and this is how we validate it and we operate differently. We're not part of the scumbags. And then they're going to go ahead and they'll pass legislation to make it a disadvantage to deal with them. They're going to make it to where, you know, the financial incentive, you're going to get 10% more return if you deal with this guy on this and all this kind of stuff. And then you have all these crazy freedom-oriented, I just know better have, you know, that actual stock in my pocket, and it's called gold. You know, they're just going to go, you know, all of what you're talking about is all of the reasons why there are so many people that can I hold it, touch it, feel it, thank you very much, and it be a, I don't know, gun, ammunition, food, toilet paper, toothpaste, you know, a chickens, I mean, you know, something that I can hold, that I'm going to be making use of. I got chickens, six chickens, big chicken fan. Middle of Phoenix, and I got six chickens. I got eggs every day.
All right.
Now, I don't know. Am I sounding that crazy? I mean, are you starting to see?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, that was one of the reasons why I think a lot of people went into housing in 2002, because that was something you could see it, feel it, touch it. It's mine. I can live on it.
Yeah, how'd that work out for us? Hey, thanks for such a great show, Suzanne. I hope you had fun. And this is I'll make sure we get this email to you. You can send it to the planet because I know there's a lot of people that need to hear what Suzanne Trimbath had to say. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Declare Your Independence. See you then.